This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 15.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. Now, although my background is working in newspapers and magazines and also in radio and TV, I'm a big believer that PR isn't just about traditional media. In fact, I believe that it's everything about how you show up in the world with your business. So that could be everything from your marketing materials to your social media profiles, even to how you look, how you dress, how you answer emails from prospective clients, and also your website. It really is everything about your public image and the public image of your business. So that's why I'm really excited today to have someone here who is an expert on how to look good online. In fact, that's actually her hashtag, how to look good or look good online, I should say. So we've got Laura Husson with us, and she is an expert at not only helping people to physically build their websites, but also to think about it from a much more strategic point of view, as in how to get your website to a place where it's really helping you build your business. And these are some of the things that we talk about in the interview. So we talk about Laura's business story. We talk about website shame, which I also talked about in episode 14, and how that can hold you back in your business. We talk about some simple things that you can do to reduce your website shame or to make you feel a bit better about your website if you don't necessarily have the budget to get it redone or update it at the moment. We talk about the things that you should think about if you are building or commissioning a new website. And we also talk about how you can use your website to help you get publicity. So there's lots of content there and a whole host of more other things that we got onto during the chat. And another nice thing about this interview is that we have an extra guest in the background. So amazingly, Laura and I did this interview 5.5 weeks after the birth of her son, Finn, who you will hear at points, just a few points, gurgling away happily in the background, as only a newborn baby could do. And it's really cute and really rather nice. So I hope you enjoy it. Let's get on with the main part of the show. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Laura. It's really, really great to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm always excited to get invited to come and speak on people's podcasts.
Oh, well, it's great to have you. And would you mind by just telling us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background and business story?
Sure. Yeah. I never know how far to go with this because it really goes a long, long way back. I knew from a very young age that I wanted to work for myself. I didn't want to be under somebody else's rules and timescale and all those kind of things. And I used to get asked when I was young, what did I want to be when I grew up? And I used to tell people that my job hadn't been invented yet. And I didn't know at that point, obviously, what that meant. But I just knew that what I was going to do, I was going to go on to do. Nobody else was doing at that time. So I think it could have been a cop-out. I'm not sure. But it has turned out to be true because obviously when I was young, there was no internet, which makes me sound ancient. And everything that I do now is all online. So what happened to me really was that I was teaching. I was a primary school teacher.
I used to be a secondary school teacher, actually. It's quite interesting. Yeah, I just teach English in secondary
school. I meet a lot of online business owners who are from teaching. So yeah, it always surprises me though still when I do. I was teaching at primary school. I was always into tech and I had my daughter. When my daughter was born, she's 6.5 now. When I was on maternity leave, it's the first time I'd ever really had that opportunity to kind of pause and think about what do I want to do? I mean, she was, I guess, 6 to 8 weeks old. She was feeding all the time. She was sleeping all the time. I had a lot of time on my hands. And I ended up in a mum and baby forum talking a lot about baby things and baby carriers. And people started saying that I got my new baby in my arms.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's just saying hi. And everybody wanted these baby carriers for holidays and things, but they couldn't all necessarily afford to buy them. So I came up with the idea that we would start a library effectively, and we would run this library in exchange for donations to the Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Society. Now, what happened there was I kind of dropped this idea casually on the forum and went away, as you do. When I came back 4 hours later, there were over 120 people requesting dates of when they could borrow this baby carrier that didn't exist yet.
Wow.
So I approached the manufacturer and explained the idea, who loved what I was coming up with. And I was really only looking for a discount, see if they would give me a discount on buying more than one. And she donated four of them. So with that in mind, I kind of figured, well, if she's into this idea, perhaps the other manufacturers will also be into that idea. So I approached all of the ones I could get my hands on. And long story short, in just under a week, I had well over £1,000 worth of baby carriers all donated on my doorstep. And I was kind of in a panic because it was like, oh my goodness, I now have to make this real. You know, I'm committed now. If people have given me all this stuff, I've got to somehow get a system in place other than just writing on this baby forum. So I built a website and started blogging, started a Twitter account, all the social media paraphernalia that went with it. And it became a really big success very quickly. And what people wanted to do was, after they tried the slings, they wanted to keep them. They didn't want to give them back. So it organically, not really a big fan of that term, but it really is what happened, turned into a retail business because people wanted to buy after they tried. So I fell into retail, online retail, by accident. That was never my intention of what I wanted to do. But what happened was that people, other mums really, who were on maternity leave, who didn't want to leave their babies, didn't want to go back to work, and they wanted to hear my story. They wanted to hear what I'd done. They wanted to hear how I'd grown such a buzz around what I was doing so quickly. And I started consulting, and at first just with other parents. And then before long, it grew into a corporate audience because, again, I was attracting a lot of attention behind what I was doing. And yeah, the rest kind of went from there. So that was a long time ago. As I say, it was nearly 7 years ago that that happened. And now we're working exclusively online, no longer in retail, with other online business owners, helping them to basically look good online, which is my hashtag. So,
oh, wow. Do you know what? Because that's what I said I wanted to talk about, because I think I picked that up from looking at your website. I hadn't realised that was your hashtag as well, hashtag look good online. I must have picked it up from reading the copy on your website. And you originally started, did you say, I got distracted by your lovely baby gurgling in the background, but did you say you originally started the business to raise money for, was it the neonatal?
Yeah, the Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Society. And I fortunately didn't have any personal experience, but two of my very close friends had stillborn babies. So it was a charity that I really wanted to kind of donate to in some way. I really wanted to feel like I was doing something to support those mums, and I didn't know what to do. So this felt like a really good way.
It's interesting because I always talk to people with their PR about having a business story. Often when people come to me looking for help with their PR, they tell me about their business and they want to get coverage for their business. And then I say, well, what's your business story? And usually there's usually been some kind of story or a personal experience, or like in your case, an experience with friends or families that's kind of sparked off that business idea. So that's why I was quite interested to find out where that had come from. So basically you started to kind of like rock online, and then people wanted to know how you were so good at it, and things kind of went from there by the sound of things.
Absolutely. It really snowballed very quickly and much quicker than I was prepared for, because I was kind of under the impression that I'd just be doing it on the side as a little hobby, and you know, I'd make a little bit of pocket money out of it, maybe I'd raise money for charity, it'd all be great. And if I'm honest, part of it was ego-based, you know, part of it was like, oh, I've got this massive audience and I can, you know, tell them about things and everybody's hanging on my new blog post. And it all felt really quite exciting at the time. I never expected it to turn into what it has subsequently turned into now, because now we're in, you know, we're a limited company with, I think we've got six full-time people in the company at the moment. And yeah, it's a monster compared to what it started out as. And yeah, I'm very proud of the journey that we've been on. And I used to always say I, and I remember going through a stage where I talked about my business as a we, because I didn't want people to think it was just me. And now I've kind of come full circle on that. I talk all the time about, you know, we, because it really is a we. But now, you know, I couldn't do it without the people who support me now. And that's a big part of how we've managed to grow to where we're at today.
And it says on your website that you help people create the websites of their dreams and help them showcase to the world, and like you say, to look good online. What sort of people have you worked with over the years?
Yeah, it really has varied. We had a big phase early on where we worked with a lot of holistic health coaches, yoga practitioners, people just in that kind of holistic arena. We seemed to be appealing to them with what we were doing at the time. That was a previous version of my website. And now it's more kind of business coaches, consultants, generally people who work online in the majority of their capacity of what they do. And yeah, we help them with strategizing and planning for creating a whole online universe, really, that just really appeals to the people they most want to work with. And that's largely based on, like I say, strategy and user experience. So it's all about making their people feel great when they stumble across their website from wherever they find them. And so much so that they just can't bring themselves to leave. And before they know it, they've spent 25 minutes clicking around the website they had no intention of visiting. So that's our goal. If we can get the people to do that, we know we've done the right job. So
that's fantastic. And that's what we all want. And just to give you a bit of a background for those who are listening, I came across Laura when I was listening to a friend of mine's podcast, Amanda Cook, who I've also been interviewed on her podcast about how to get PR. And what really struck me about Laura's interview was she talked about website shame. And she talked about how people kind of got stuck in their business sometimes because they had this thing called website shame. And it's something that I've heard so often with my clients where people will say to me, I really want to do PR. I really want to pitch that article to The Guardian, or I really want to become a Huffington Post blogger, but I can't because I'm ashamed of my website and I can't move forward because I'm afraid that if a journalist or an editor gets a pitch from me, they'll go straight to my website. They'll see it looks rubbish. Now, I always encourage people, you know, not to let that hold them back because it really is about the quality of the idea. But if someone is suffering from website shame, well, first of all, it'd be good to know, you know, your thoughts on the whole website shame thing. But also, if somebody is feeling that, it's not something you can fix overnight unless you've got loads of money. So are there any sort of short-term measures that you can put in place to help you feel a little bit happier with your website until you've got the budget to do something bigger?
Sure. Okay. So yeah, website shame is something that everybody we work with has experienced. And I've had it too. I know how it feels. And basically, in short, what happens is you start a business with no budget or, you know, a very tiny capital that you put in yourself, and you DIY or you do it yourself, and you get to a point that's totally acceptable to a point. You get to a point where you outgrow your website. So your profile or your expertise and your testimonials kind of outshine what your website is showing you to be doing. So what happens is, and the conversation I usually have is, that people are at network meetings and things, and they're too embarrassed to take their business cards with them because they don't want to direct people back to their websites. And that is the conversation I have day in, day out with people who say, you know, I've got all this great blog content to write, but I don't know where to put it because I'm too embarrassed for people to see my homepage. Or, you know, it's just that whole feeling of just that it really limits them from growing any further because they just don't want to bring the attention to the fact that they didn't used to be where they are now. And it's just that kind of leapfrog thing. It's a natural part of your online journey as an online business owner. Everybody goes through it at some point. And actually what will happen is, even if you revamp and you restyle, eventually you'll go through it again, because if you continue to grow, your needs will always change and the web is always evolving and it's an ongoing process. So this is why I use the hashtag look good online, because it's not a one hit wonder. You know, it's not a case of I'll have my website done by a professional and then I'm set forever. I can just get on with my business. Really, you need an ongoing relationship with somebody. Not necessarily that you need to pay them thousands of dollars or pounds every month, but you need ongoing dialogue so that somebody understands you and your business and can help you grow.
I mean, that's so true, isn't it? Because I feel like, I mean, people are often saying to me that my website looks really nice. But, you know, I look at it every day and there's things I'm not happy with. There's things I'd like to change. There's things that I would like to improve. And every time I do make an improvement, I always feel like, well, what else can I do? And there'll always be something I'm not quite happy with. And I mean, I'm lucky that I'm married to a web designer, but the downside of that is that he's got clients. And so I'm always bottom of his list. So there's always something that I'm like, that doesn't quite work, or I really want to change that. And he's like, yeah, just wait. And so, I mean, even I think when you do get a website that you feel okay about, I think in some ways I still have website shame about, you know, there might be a page on my website I'm not happy with, or there might be a section of it that I'm not happy with. It's a working, I mean, I feel it's like a work in progress, and every single day there's something that I would like to improve. Obviously, it's not just about the money, but it takes time, doesn't it? To have a big website revamp, it takes time. So what can you do? Are there any things that you can do just in the meantime to make you feel a little bit happier about your website?
Yeah, there's loads. And I mean, the quickest and easiest thing that I recommend to people who are really held back, the people who are totally blocked from, you know, putting themselves in front of potential paying clients, etc., I say to them, the best thing to do is to abandon ship. And basically, if their website, if they've really outgrown it and it's not representative in any way, then the best best thing to do is to get a landing page up on your website. So by a landing page, I mean a page where you're giving away something of value to your ideal audience or your ideal customer, and in exchange for a name and an email address. And you don't necessarily need to have any more than that. If you've got your own domain, whether it's in your name or your business name, and you've got a landing page that's allowing people to exchange their email address for something that you can give them that is of value to them and allows you to demonstrate your expertise, then that's really all you need to grow an online business. So once you've got that, you can market or build a relationship directly in their inboxes, which is obviously a whole big other topic.
And could you create that or just on your site, or could you use something, a tool like Lead Pages or something like that?
Yeah, either or, it depends. I mean, if you want to go, there's varying levels, basically. I mean, you can use tools like Lead Pages, absolutely. We love Lead Pages and we recommend that to lots of our clients.
Oh, and can you just explain a little bit about how, I mean, I use it, but I probably won't be as good as explaining it, how it works like you. Could you explain what Lead Pages is?
Sure. So Lead Pages is basically a big library of templates that connect to your mailing list database. So for example, MailChimp or AWeber are probably where most people would be starting out. So what happens is you select one of those templates. You can build your own as well, but probably I would say use their templates, because one of the fantastic things that I love about Lead Pages is the fact that guys behind it are marketing genius. You know, they've got years and years of experience. They know what works. They know what converts. They know how to get people to sign up. So I try to advise people to stick as closely to the Lead Pages templates as possible. If you have branding colors and things, you can change the colors of the templates and add in your own design and style. But what it allows you to do is you can put that onto your own domain, and then you can also have your own thank you page that's set up through Lead Pages. So you can create what feels like a very professional, high-end package. It looks smooth and slick and all the other things that we want to look online. But really, you can be up and running in 10 minutes with that. So it's a fantastic, quick, easy tool for you to use.
And they've done lots of testing, haven't they, to see that they've done a lot of testing to see what converts better. And, you know, if you have like the picture on the right hand side or the left hand side, or if you have the text.
They really have.
Side,
yeah. And their blog and their webinars and their training and all of that stuff is golden. Everything they put out, that, you know, really, I would have a Lead Pages account even if I never used their templates, because the advice and the information they share is so valuable. And, you know, they really do know what they're talking about. There's a lot of people out there selling information and advice about online marketing, but these guys, they're selling a product and they give away all the free information. So it's kind of a really good way of getting all the information without having to buy online course after online course.
Yeah, and I can link to Lead Pages in the show notes. And you mentioned that if you decide to abandon ship and just go minimal, just have one page. And obviously the key thing is to collect people's email addresses so you can keep in touch with them, and then when your new website is ready, then you can be all out there bells and whistles. On my website, as some people listening will know, I have a free 5-day press release writing course which people can sign up for, because that's the thing that people ask me about the most. I mean, I would say personally it's probably not the, you know, it's not the be all and end all when it comes to getting PR, but it's the thing that people know about, so it's a good one for me. And I've managed to in a few months, I think I managed to get about best part of 1,000 signups for that. So that's, you know, really, really valuable. I should just mention at this point, I've also created a new one for my podcast, which is How to Pitch to Journalists. So if you're listening to this and you want to kind of see what that looks like, if you go to the show notes for this episode, you'll be able to see my new lead magnet, as you may or may not know that they're generally called, is a 5-day email course on how to pitch to journalists. So that's what I've chosen to do. It seems to work for me. And I've tried different things out. I used to have like a 1-page PDF that people could download in exchange for my email address, but I found the 5-day thing works quite well, because then you get an opportunity, people are inviting you in their inbox for 5 days in a row, which is great, and you kind of build up a little bit of trust and a relationship. What other things can people do as a lead magnet? What else could you create to get people to give you their email address?
Gosh, do you know, absolutely anything. If you're a product-based business, you can offer discounts or free shipping. If you are in coaching and consulting, then you can offer free mini sessions. So like a 15-minute free call, or, you know, if you're starting out, you're not going to expect thousands of people to sign up every day. So that's a really good one to do when you're just first starting out. You can even put a link to an online scheduler directly on your website that can link up to your email list if you want to do that. The most important thing is to really think about the person who you want to work with. Like, really, really get specific about it. and then find out what they need that you can offer, so that rather than creating something and then trying to find people who need it, you're creating something that is in direct response to a need that is already out there. Because when you're answering that need, then what happens is not only do people who come to your site sign up, but they tell their friends about it, they share it. And that's the biggest part of the uphill struggle with email list building, is if you've got something that people are sharing and shouting and raving about, then you're onto a winner.
And personally, I found that actually sometimes packaging stuff up, that it's not necessarily about creating new content. It can be about actually just bringing together stuff you've already got, because you could find all of the information that's in my press release writing course and my new pitching course. You could find all of that on my blog if you looked and searched for it. And also I've written stuff for The Guardian about all of this. But actually it's about packaging it up and making it convenient so that it all comes in the right order and you don't have to search for it. And sometimes I've heard people procrastinate about creating this sort of stuff. And actually often they've already got content that maybe they could just repackage and make it look nice. And that was actually another question I wanted to ask you, is it worth, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't say I was a particularly artistic person, but I like nice design and I like looking at nice things. And I can't help but be swayed by, if I download something and it's not particularly well designed, I will kind of notice that and will note that about the business owner. But if I see something that's kind of beautifully designed, even maybe if the content isn't as in-depth as it could be, there's just something about it. I just kind of think, yeah, I like their style. Is that important that it's nicely designed?
It is, because, you know, some of us, we learn in different ways. We absorb things in different ways and we kind of bookmark memories of things in different ways. So if we're visual, which it obviously sounds like you are describing yourself would be, then that really sticks, you know, and visual impact, it really counts, you know, because it's much like picking up a book in a bookstore. If the cover is appealing, you're going to want to, you kind of hope the blurb is as good as the cover is, because you want to hold that beautiful book. And, you know, if you're going on holiday, you want to be laid on your sun lounger with the pretty book. So it is very much about that as well. I mean, having said that, I've seen some of the best webinars and things that I've attended in the past have been on plain white slides with no design and, you know, just delivering the really essential info. I think that's great for live content. I think if it's something that you're giving in a passive way, such as somebody, an automatic way, so somebody signs up and then they receive something, I think that opportunity to build that know, like, trust factor, you have to hit everything. So it's a case of really good content. It's definitely a case of less is more as well. I've seen a lot of people go completely all in on giving something huge. And there is a lot to be said for the fact that we don't place enough value on free content. And if we pay for something, we're like, we're going to get our money's worth out of this. We're going to absorb everything and we're going to implement things. If it's free, it's actually a lot harder to get people to take action. They'll read it and think, oh, that's good, I'll do that one day. And then they file it.
Yeah.
So if you can make it beautiful, if you've got a PDF, if you can make it interactive so that they have to do something or fill it out, or if you can tag on a Facebook community or any kind of interaction, then you're onto a winner with that formula, because that's what people crave. They just want to feel like they're actually part of something rather than just receiving automatic content.
Right, that's really useful stuff. And just to say, I guess if you are designing this stuff yourself, you can use things like PicMonkey and Canva. Would you advise people to do that DIY stuff? Because I've seen some people do that really well, but I've also seen some people do it not so well. And I know I'm not, when I try and create things, I can use them, but they don't always look that professional, because although I've got probably a good eye for design, I'm not actually practically that brilliant, I don't think. So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a place for DIY. There always is. We learn a lot when we DIY things, because we learn from mistakes and we test things out and there's no commitment involved. However, there is a lot to be said for hiring somebody who understands the principles of design, can understand who you're trying to target with the content that you're trying to target them with, and combine that together. That's going to make something that's really irresistible, because what they'll do is they'll consider what appeals to your specific audience. And you'll look at other things that those people like and create something that comes in line with that. So there's a whole big process involved in that. And the other thing, which actually reminded me, I was thinking that earlier when you said that your husband was a web designer, when I redesigned my own website, which is almost a year ago now, I had to hire an external designer to help because I was too close to it. I needed that outside input to be able to say, okay, how about this? Or have you thought about that? And, you know, while we might get completely absorbed in one direction, it actually might mean that we're potentially closing ourselves off from what might be the better solution because we're just too close to be able to take that step back and see objectively what our audience want rather than what we want to give them.
That's a really, really good point. And actually, I use, my husband's a web designer, but he's from a magazine background. He used to work in magazines and work in journalism. So I use a designer as well. And so the designer sort of comes up with the look and he copies it. Like, so, and we have this joke that I'll often go to my designer and say, oh, my husband's done this. And it's not quite right. It doesn't look quite right. And then she'll take it off. But yeah, he's brilliant at kind of, because he's a magazine designer, he's brilliant at copying stuff. And once we've set up a look for something, and that's something I've done. I talked about it actually in episode 5 is my interview with Phil Pallon. And any of you who are really interested in visual stuff and branding, go back and have a listen to that because it's a really nice one. But yeah, we've created a look for my blog post images and for my podcast images. And then once they're set up, he just copies them. I got to the point where maybe even I could copy them. But between the two of them, they've worked something out that's kind of consistent and seems to work. But I know, personally, probably because of my background coming from, you know, teaching people about PR, I think it's a bit like if your website or your printed materials look a bit naff, I always feel it's a bit like turning up to speak at an event in an old cardigan or something. Yeah. She says wearing an old cardigan because it's cold today. But I think that whether we like it or not, I think looks matter and people judge us by how we come across and how we look and how our website looks and our materials. And I know that can be hard when you're first starting out because you may not have the budget to hire these people, but it's worth, I think, I sometimes see people spending money on other things.
Oh, yeah.
When I think
the logo, this is the thing that people get caught up in, a logo. And I see this a lot online in forums and groups and discussions. And people will come, you know, they'll submit 6 different versions of a logo that they've been given, which are all almost identical. And they will agonize for the longest time over which logo they should pick. In reality, nobody from your ideal customer base cares what your logo looks like. What they want is something that's going to really help them. If that thing looks beautiful too, I mean, there's that whole thing. There's a big statistic that's bandied around the web, but you have 8 seconds from when somebody first lands on your website to turn them into somebody who's going to stick around. And I would argue that time and again, I'd argue that amount, because I think you might have 8 seconds before they might click away, but it's a split second before they've subconsciously developed that feel of whether they trust what you're about. Because if you land on something and it looks professional, it looks well thought out, the secret with that, to be honest, is to keep things as minimal as possible. And if you are DIYing, the temptation is, oh, I found this great plugin that will give me this thing on the homepage that flashes or moves, or I can make it snow, or, you know, I speak to a lot of clients who want movement or music or just general things to keep it more interesting, to make them stand out. And that's actually a real distraction from what you're about and what your value is. The job of your website and your homepage, especially if you've got a landing page, is to communicate exactly how you can help that specific person. And they will decide in a snap of fingers whether you're the right person for that or not. So going back to that whole visual thing, everything that you create, and you mentioned the word consistency, which is that's actually my theme for 2016, is consistency. And I talk about that a lot with my clients, because we'll create them. Some of my clients will spend 5 figures having an amazing website built, and then they'll hook up their opt-in to an autoresponder with a PDF that they've designed in Canva or PicMonkey or wherever, that's got fonts that we haven't used and, you know, colors that aren't quite matching and things. And I literally have to stop them and say, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that. You're damaging your brand. There's a time and place for DIYing, as, you know, we've said a few times now. And I think it's important to say that when you're starting out, less is more. Go with a minimal, simple design that you can create yourself and clone out repeatedly, because that's where things get messy, when you try to make it complicated and you can't duplicate it. And just go with that consistent approach. Once you've got your formula, stick with it until you can afford to hire a pro.
Right. And I guess you could even do the same. I mean, I've seen some people just use a Facebook page until they're ready or they've got the budget for their website. Would you advise that, or would you advise people to be over on their own domain straight away?
Definitely 100% or more if it's available on your own website ASAP. The social media platforms are fantastic for funneling traffic to your website once you've built relationships with people, but, and they definitely play a huge part. But the problem is, unless you are capturing emails on your own domain, you are completely at the whim and mercy of whoever is in charge of these social networks. So if Facebook went down overnight, if your page got deleted or lost, or you were locked out, you've lost your audience. So you need to be funneling wherever you are online, whether it's Facebook, Pinterest, wherever it is, you need to be funneling people back to your own website with a really irresistible opt-in at all costs. That's got to be the full focus.
Yeah, it's definitely a really, really good point there. And I keep meaning to say, actually, for anyone listening who doesn't know about PicMonkey and Canva, these are kind of things that I sort of talk about with people all the time and forget other people may not know what they are, but they're just kind of tools, that design tools that can help you put together blog post images or banners or Facebook ads or whatever. And they're really, really good. But as with any design, I think if you know what you're doing and you've got a good eye, you can make things look really great. But I notice when I've had people do things for me that maybe, that, like you said, the fonts don't match or something like that. And I'm cringing. So I'm looking and thinking, that doesn't match with my website, or that doesn't match with my usual fonts. So, yeah, and so, you know, I wouldn't say I was particularly artistic. So I think if you're going to use those kind of things, I guess Laura would probably say to just be consistent with your fonts and colours and things like that, and keep it all sort of quite uniform. And I did want to ask you, I'm quite obsessed about this topic, which is why I always get kind of a bit sidetracked. But I do obviously want to ask you about, so when you do have a budget for a website, something people ask me about a lot, and obviously this is not my area of expertise for a minute, but is, well, how much do I need to spend to get a great website? And how do I find somebody really good? And how long will it take? And have you got any guidelines around that?
Sure, yeah. I actually have created a whole, my opt-in is all created around exactly this, which is prepping people for hiring a pro to create a website. And I created that after years and years. It's only been up for 6 months. It's my newest opt-in that I've ever created. And it's one of those things that, again, it's less is more. It's three very simple steps that outlines what you need in order to get the best out of the experience of working with a pro, how you can get yourself ready, and then how to get the best out of who you're going to hire and how to hire them. So there are definitely some questions that you need to make sure you ask. And the step before that, kind of the clue there, is the fact that if you're looking at people to hire to do your website for you, go on recommendations. Contact those people, and if they offer you a call, then take it, because this thing about just hiring somebody over the internet works on lots and lots of levels. It doesn't work for web design, because you really, it's a very personal and very collaborative process. And I think that's quite understated, that the importance of the collaborative relationship. It has to be a fit. If you are hiring somebody who you don't really look forward to speaking to, you know, ideally, the person who you hire to do your website, you want to be itching to see their emails in your inbox. You want to be, can't wait to do my next Skype call with them, because you just get on really well together. They get who you are, they get your business, and they're going to help you up level, because that's what you're doing. So you definitely need to get them on a call, and hopefully they invite you to a call. That's the ideal solution. I mean, that's the first thing we do when we receive an inquiry email through the website. The first thing I do is invite somebody onto a call so that I can get to know them, because for us, not every client who inquires is also a fit for our business. So we need to make sure that it's going to work for both of us.
And do you need to spend thousands on this? No. You mentioned somebody, you said, oh, I've come across people who've spent five figures or whatever. What would, you know, to get a great website, what sort of budget? Because people often ask me this because they're completely clueless.
It's all relative, really. So if you're just starting out, it could be that you just want to hire a developer or a designer to do a really nice landing page in your branding. It might be that you want to hire somebody to just get you a basic brand identity. So by that, we mean your fonts, your colours, your image look and feel, so that you've got a guide, like a PDF Bible, if you like, that wherever you are, whether you're on social networks, you're working with a designer in future, you've got that kind of consistency to carry across everything you do. That would be the smartest investment of money. If people are tight on budget, you can totally work with somebody to get your brand identity and then DIY everything else. That's a great starting point.
And would you recommend something like WordPress, or do you have other things that you use?
100%. Yeah, we work exclusively in WordPress because it's so great for... It's supported by everybody and everything. There are bazillions of developers out there who can help you. So if you get stuck with some, you know, something that you're trying to do yourself or somebody else has done for you, you can pick up a developer, you know, at the drop of a hat, who will be able to help you out with figuring it out. And as for blogging, for content creation, it's the easiest platform to use, and Google loves it. So we are all in on WordPress. So
yeah, I found it's really easy. I mean, even starting my podcast, I've been able to integrate that so easily. And also just being able to update things. I wouldn't say I was a particularly techie person, but I've built my own sales pages and that kind of thing. And I wouldn't for a minute say I was techie, but I think if you're kind of, you know, quite kind of scrappy and determined and there's so much stuff out there to help you. And one cautionary tale for me, actually, I've used People Per Hour, which I've actually used People Per Hour as a kind of online, and Fiverr, you know, some of these sites where you can get people to do little jobs for you for next to nothing. But I've tried two people to do web type jobs for me on People Per Hour, and both times it's been, I'm not saying this is People Per Hour's fault. Yeah. The journalist in me now is not kind of now like apologizing, but the people I hired, they weren't able to do, you know, what they said that they could do for me. Yeah. And we ended up having to kind of go our separate ways. And it was all a bit kind of like, and when you were talking just then about how important it was to have a relationship with somebody, and I really learned, I mean, I'm lucky because I've got help at home with this, but I also do pay a designer to get the look right. But I think it's, personally, I just think it's worth investing money in this. I think there's probably other parts of your business that you could probably skimp on, but I think I've had a few disasters where I've lost a little bit of money by trying to get to outsource things that I probably should have tried to get a personal recommendation for somebody who, you know, a proper developer to work with me on it.
Mm. And it is all about that personal relationship, and that, unfortunately, 9 times out of 10 on those kind of sites where you hire somebody by the hour, you're not getting that kind of relationship. They're brilliant if you know exactly what you need done and you're able to communicate in that technical language and be specific, they will get the job done. But what they won't do is they won't come in with a strategic point of view. They won't make recommendations. They won't ask you questions about your audience or your experience or your business to understand how to best get the job done. And one of the things we come up with quite often is the fact that a client will ask us whether they can do something like, you know, can we have music play when our homepage loads? And of course, if you hired somebody off the web, they'll be like, yep, done. You know, I can do that in 10 minutes. That doesn't necessarily mean you should do it.
No, that's such a good point.
So there's that missing piece, you know, and that's the piece that we work with our clients with all the time, is to make sure that everything they do supports their business goals and helps to grow them in the right way, to give the right impression and to establish that whole all important know, like, and trust factor. It comes back to that every time.
And just one final thing I wanted to ask you about was, I mean, obviously this is the Soulful PR podcast, so we're all about sort of PR, but I mean, I'm always saying to people that it isn't just about press coverage, it's much wider, it's pretty much everything about how you and your business show up in the world. But I mean, I'm probably putting you on the spot here a little bit, but from your clients' experience, I always say to people, if you've got a good website and a good brand and a good look, then when a journalist is looking for somebody to talk on a particular topic, and in your case, you know, you said you work with lots of coaches and experts, then if they arrive on your site and it looks nice and stylish and consistent, then, you know, this is just me, my opinion, that they're going to see you as a more credible source. They can't help but do that. But if your website's a little bit kind of, you know, scrappy looking and a bit out of date and whatever, what have your clients told you about what having a great website has done for their career in terms of publicity and opening doors for them?
I think the biggest thing that we find with our clients after they overhaul or upgrade, as we call it, is that the people who are coming to their websites find the information that they need much, much faster. So, you know, we're not a big fan of the word busy, but, you know, we are all busy people with lots of things to do. And if I go to your website, for example, and I want to find, you know, how I can contact you or perhaps a specific article, if I can get there in the fewest amount of clicks possible without having to make too many decisions, then for me, it's like, oh my goodness, that was the most amazing website. I had a great experience there. And you really feel positive about it. So it's that level that goes beyond just how it looks, but how it feels to move around the website, how well thought out the flow is as well.
Yeah, and from with my journalist hat on, people often, they get quite panicky. I'm going to do an episode about this actually soon, about having a press page. And they're always kind of I can't get press until I've got a press page. And I'm like, look, as long as the journalist can get onto your site, they can get hold of you. And that means having some kind of number that they can get hold of you, even if it's the middle of the night, which people don't always like, but that's a whole other episode. But how people can get your contact details, they can get hold of you quickly. and they can also get hold of some good quality pictures of you very quickly. Yeah. That's all they want. They don't want, you know, if you've written some other stuff before or you've had some nice press coverage, it's reassuring for them to be able to see it. Yes. But actually, you don't need it to be fancy. It just needs to be there. And like you say, you need to be able to get there. You're a busy journalist on deadline. You need to be able to get there in as few clicks as possible. And you don't want to have to hunt around looking for that stuff.
Exactly. So, yeah, if you make people's jobs easy, then, you know, they're going to come back again. So that's the biggest goal.
Brilliant. Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been so useful. I could talk about this topic for ages. I'm really quite geeky about it. But where can we find you online?
Sure. So my website is at laurahusson.com, which is my name. And I'm sure that you'll see that written on the show notes page somewhere. The opt-in that I mentioned that would probably be useful for some of the people who are listening is at prep.laurahusson.com. So that's prep.laurahusson.com. And that's my free training ground for people who are I designed it for people who are getting ready to work with professionals, but I've had lots of people come through it who've been DIYing and they've said that they've got loads out of it. So it's useful for anybody, even if you've already got a website. It's great to revisit just to check that you've got everything you need and that you're ticking all those boxes. So I definitely encourage people to check that out. And on my website, I've got a page called Say Hello, which links to all my social media profiles. So you can come and stalk me wherever you like.
Brilliant. And of course, we wouldn't expect anything else, but Laura has a great looking website and some great photography. And those who've been listening so far will know that I love talking about photography as well.
Oh, that's a whole other subject.
But great looking website, great photography. So thanks so much for that. And also, what's your baby called? I should have asked you at the beginning. Oh.
My baby is called Finn.
We've also had Finn, which has been lovely. We've had Finn like gurgling along in the background, which has been lovely.
My shoulder, and he's 5.5 weeks old at the moment, so he's in that snuggly newborn stage. So I'm lucky that I'm able to do this. I'm sure a few months from now I won't be able to sit still and have him in the same room as me while I'm doing interviews. So.
Well, that's amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I don't think I could have done that when my daughter was 5.5 weeks. So thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, do head over to the show notes at janetmurray.co.uk/episode15, where you can download my free course, Pitch Like a Pro. So that's janetmurray.co.uk/episode15.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.